In Colombia, a woman dials 911, screaming that her ex-boyfriend is beating her right now and is still in the house. Later that night, once he is gone and she is safe, an officer takes a calm written account of the same attack. She never testifies at trial. Which of those two statements can the prosecution use? The 911 call, not the written account. Same witness, same night, same attack, opposite results, and the reason is a single word, testimonial. The Sixth Amendment gives the accused the right to be confronted with the witnesses against him, and that right sits on top of the hearsay rules. By the end of this episode, you will run any out-of-court statement through both. Here is the route. First, the core rule and what triggers it. Then, four exits, because most questions are won by spotting that the clause never applies. Then, the primary purpose test, which decides what testimonial means. Then, forensic reports, statements to non-police, and what happens when the declarant shows up. Then, two doctrines that let testimonial statements in anyway, and a co-defendant's confession. Start with vocabulary. Hearsay is an out-of-court statement offered to prove that what it says is true, and the declarant is the person who made it. When the prosecution offers a declarant statement against a criminal defendant, it must clear two completely separate hurdles. First, the hearsay rules. It has to be non-hearsay or fit an exception. Second, the confrontation clause. If the statement is testimonial, the Constitution bars it unless special conditions are met. These are independent, so a statement can satisfy a hearsay exception and still flunk confrontation. Here is the rule the whole topic turns on. A testimonial out-of-court statement, by a declarant who does not testify at this trial, is inadmissible against a criminal defendant, unless two things are true. The declarant is now unavailable, and the defendant had a prior opportunity to cross-examine that declarant. And reliability is not a substitute. Before 2004, a court could admit such a statement if it seemed trustworthy. Not anymore. If the statement is testimonial and the defendant never got to cross-examine, it stays out, however reliable it looks, and even if it fits a hearsay exception. Four things must all be present. A criminal prosecution, a statement offered against the accused, a testimonial statement, and a declarant who does not testify subject to cross-examination. Recite this and you can answer most confrontation questions. Testimonial plus no cross equals inadmissible, unless unavailable and prior cross. Now the four exits, because most questions are won by spotting that the clause never applies at all. 1. The statement is non-testimonial. The clause reaches only testimonial hearsay, so a 911 call for help, a business record, a casual remark to a friend, none of them raise a confrontation problem. 2. The declarant testifies at this trial and can be cross-examined now. 3. The statement is not offered for its truth. A statement offered to show its effect on the listener or why police acted does not trigger the clause. 4. It is not against the accused or the case is not criminal. Defense evidence, the defendant's own words, and every civil case fall outside. If anyone fits, there is no confrontation problem, and you analyze the statement under the hearsay rules alone. So everything hinges on one word. A statement is testimonial when, judged objectively, its primary purpose was to create an out-of-court substitute for trial testimony, to prove past facts for a later prosecution. A formal accusation dressed up as a statement. It is non-testimonial when the primary purpose was something else, most often helping police handle an ongoing emergency or simply talking to a friend. Ask whether the speaker was bearing witness against someone or reacting to a crisis. The court looks at objective circumstances, not private motives. Four things are classically testimonial: prior testimony under oath, at a grand jury, a preliminary hearing, or a former trial. Answers to police interrogation aimed at nailing down what happened for a prosecution. Sworn affidavits and formal confessions prepared for court. And forensic lab certificates prepared to prove a fact against the accused. On the other side, a business record kept in the ordinary course. Testimonial or not? Not. It is made to run the business, not to prove guilt. Same answer for a statement between co-conspirators pushing the crime forward. It advances the scheme. The hardest calls involve statements to police, and the dividing line is the ongoing emergency, which is our Columbia caller. While he is still in the house and she is screaming for rescue, those frantic answers are non-testimonial. Once he is gone and she is safe, the officer's calm written account is testimonial. Its purpose is to preserve evidence. So what shows a live emergency? A continuing threat, not a danger already passed. The kind of weapon, and whether an armed suspect is still at large. The victim's medical condition, and the informality of the encounter, chaotic on-the-spot questioning rather than a calm interview. Forensic evidence is a favorite testing ground. A crime lab report prepared to prove a fact against the accused, that a powder is methamphetamine, is testimonial. The prosecution cannot just hand the jury the certificate. The analyst who ran the test must appear for cross-examination. And it must be the right analyst. The state cannot satisfy the clause by putting a stand-in on the stand who did not perform or observe the test to read out the absent analyst's findings. The Supreme Court tightened this in 2024. A testifying expert repeats an absent analyst's factual statements to support her own opinion. The tests she said she ran, the results she got. Those come in for their truth, because they only support the opinion if they are true. The expert becomes a mouthpiece, and admitting them violates the clause. What a substitute expert may still do: testify from personal knowledge about how that lab generally operates, explain forensic techniques in general terms, or offer a genuinely independent opinion. What she may not do is smuggle in the absent analyst's specific findings under the label "basis for my opinion." So watch for a question where the prosecution says the report is not offered for its truth, just as the basis of the expert's opinion. After 2024, that label does not save testimonial lab findings. Statements to someone who is not law enforcement are far less likely to be testimonial, though not automatically exempt. A small child tells a teacher who has been hurting her. Testimonial or not? Usually not. A young child talking to a caregiver is not creating evidence, and the adult is protecting her, not investigating a crime. The same instinct covers offhand remarks to friends and family, and the two categories that are non-testimonial by their nature: business records and statements between co-conspirators. Now keep this escape hatch front of mind, because questions love to hide it. If the declarant actually testifies and faces cross-examination, the clause places no constraints at all on that declarant's earlier out-of-court statements, even testimonial ones. In Franklin, a witness gives a formal sworn statement to detectives, plainly testimonial, then takes the stand and can be cross-examined about it. No violation. And it does not much matter if she now remembers little. The clause guarantees the opportunity to cross-examine, not good answers. Two narrow doctrines can admit a testimonial statement with no prior cross-examination at all. First, the dying declaration. A statement about the cause or circumstances of what the speaker believes is their own impending death, offered in a homicide prosecution. Apply that as a firm rule, because the exception was part of the common law when the Sixth Amendment was adopted, courts hold the clause incorporates it. If the statement qualifies, it comes in. Second, forfeiture by wrongdoing. A defendant who deliberately makes a witness unavailable forfeits the right to confront her. You cannot intimidate a witness into silence and then complain you never got to cross-examine her. FRE 804B 6 mirrors the constitutional doctrine. But here is the catch students miss. Forfeiture requires that the defendant intended to prevent the witness from testifying. In Olympia, a defendant is on trial for murdering his ex-partner, and the state wants her earlier accusations of abuse in, arguing he forfeited by killing her. He killed her, so he forfeited. Right or not? Not automatically. The state must show he killed her, at least in part, to stop her from testifying. Not simply that his crime is the reason she is unavailable. A recurring trap arises when two defendants are tried together. One co-defendant confessed to police, and the confession also names the other defendant. If the confessor does not testify, the other cannot cross-examine him. Yet the jury hears a confession that fingers him. The rule, often called the Bruton rule, is that admitting a non-testifying co-defendant's confession, which facially incriminates the defendant, violates the Confrontation Clause, and an instruction to consider it only against the confessor does not cure it, because jurors cannot realistically unhear it. So what works? Try the defendants separately, or redact the confession so it does not obviously refer to the defendant, paired with a limiting instruction. A redaction that swaps the name for an obvious blank, or the word deleted, fails if it still plainly points to him. A genuinely neutral redaction is acceptable, and this doctrine reaches only testimonial statements. Finally, confrontation is not only about keeping out paper. It shapes how live witnesses must testify. The guarantees are that the witness testify under oath in the defendant's physical presence and face cross-examination in front of the jury that judges their demeanor. That right is strong but not absolute. A court may let a particularly vulnerable witness, typically a child abuse victim, testify by one-way closed-circuit television, but only on a case-specific finding that it is necessary to protect that child from serious emotional trauma. A blanket practice, or a screen with no individualized findings, is not allowed. A word on authorities. This episode named one, the Bruton Rule, and that is the name of a doctrine rather than a citation you will be asked to recite. This topic is starred, so expect to apply the rule from memory with no statute provided, and expect the question to turn on labels rather than names. If you keep only three, keep these. Testimonial plus no cross equals inadmissible, unless unavailable and prior cross. The four exits, non-testimonial, declarant testifies, not for truth, not against the accused, or not criminal. And the sentence that is often the whole point of the question. A hearsay exception does not rescue a testimonial statement. Now the traps, straight from the examiner's favorites. 1. Treating hearsay and confrontation as the same question. They are separate, and a valid hearsay exception does not cure a confrontation violation. 2. Applying the clause to non-testimonial statements. It does not reach them at all. 3. Forgetting the clause is criminal only, and only bars statements offered against the accused. 4. Missing that a testifying declarant cures the problem completely. 5. Assuming that killing the victim automatically forfeits confrontation. Forfeiture needs intent to prevent testimony. 6. Thinking a limiting instruction saves a co-defendant's facially incriminating confession. It does not. 7. letting basis of the expert's opinion disguise an absent analyst's testimonial lab findings. And 8. Confusing this with the compulsory process clause, which is about the defendant's power to call his own witnesses, not to exclude the prosecution's. Time for the quick check. And this one comes straight from the BRGO question bank. A grand jury hears sworn testimony from a witness describing how the defendant orchestrated a bank fraud. Grand jury proceedings are closed, so neither the defendant nor his lawyer could question him. At trial, the witness invokes the Fifth Amendment and refuses to testify, making him unavailable. The prosecution offers a transcript of that grand jury testimony. May it be admitted against the defendant? Option 1. Yes, because grand jury testimony is under oath and therefore inherently reliable. Option 2. Yes, because the witness is now unavailable, which is all the clause requires. Option 3. No, because the defendant never had an opportunity to cross-examine him. Pause here if you want a moment. The answer is option 3. Grand jury testimony is classic testimonial evidence, so it comes in against the accused only if the declarant is unavailable and the defendant previously had a chance to cross-examine. Grand jury proceedings exclude the defendant, so there was no such opportunity, and the transcript is barred. Option 1 relies on the oath and reliability, which is exactly the pre-2004 thinking the court abandoned. Reliability is not a substitute for confrontation. Option 2 states only half the rule. Unavailability is necessary, but not sufficient. There are 30-plus more questions on this topic alone, each with every option explained like that. 5 things to take away. 1. Hearsay and confrontation are two separate hurdles, and clearing one does not clear the other. 2. The clause reaches only testimonial statements offered against the accused in a criminal case by a declarant who does not testify. 3. The cure is unavailability plus a prior opportunity to cross-examine, and both halves are required. 4. Lead with the 4 exits. Non-testimonial, declarant testifies, not for truth, not against the accused, or not criminal. 5. Two doctrines still let a testimonial statement in, a dying declaration, and forfeiture where the defendant acted to silence the witness, which is why our Columbia caller's screams reach the jury and her calm, written account never does. The emergency ended, and the purpose changed with it. Next time, impeachment and rehabilitation. Practice this topic with more than 2,900 exam-style questions, free to start, at nextgenbargo.com. This episode is for education and exam preparation only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the NCBE or any bar examining authority.